Well, kind of what have I learned in 44 years of doing Easter sermons? Actually, only 43. I missed one Easter when I was ill. Easter and most of the great religious holidays tend to give Unitarian Universalists trouble because we tend to come at things with a slightly different angle, as the opening word story sermon indicated. And it's a really good example of how something doesn't have to be factual to be true. It's a great story about the Unitarian sitting there silently while three different religious issues were discussed, and he just or she just sat there, which tells you immediately this didn't happen this way. And because no Unitarian Universalist clergy person in an association of clergy sits silently for those assertions. We chime in all of the time and have wonderful talks and discussions in search of our common truths. It is a question of emphasis on what you see in these holy days and these holidays to take home. And my story has been an evolving one. One might assume that because of my Jewish background, I had particular difficulty with the gospel stories and the story of the resurrection. Well, the truth is, I had trouble with the literal meaning of all of the stories. Resurrection didn't give me any more problems than parting the Red Sea gave me. I figured it was special effects, but this was pre-CGI. And I was looking for the meaning and the truths, not the facts. But it took me a long time. Well, change the tense. It has taken me a long time to really have the courage to be open to the poetries and to the metaphors and not simply be one of two kinds of fundamentalists. The fundamentalists who say it's all true, it all literally happened that way, or it's just a book of nonsense, or the other fundamentalists who say it's all a book of nonsense and none of it happened and none of it means anything. The middle road is to take our scriptures, our stories, our myths seriously, to look at them, to explore them, to be nourished by the poetry and the universal values that they try to express. I went through probably three stages of encountering scripture, particularly the Easter story, as a good Unitarian 44 years ago. I'm sure that my first Easter sermon would have done very well at any university campus as a botany lecture. I talked about the birds and the bees and pollination. It reminded me of a certain conversation my father had with me when I was around 12, which equipped me really well if I became romantically interested in birds and bees and flowers, which fortunately never happened. But it was a botany lecture. It was all about the earth returning and the sun returning and how wonderful and marvelous that is. And it is. And our religions are connected to the natural life cycles. You can tell from how our holidays are placed where most of them came from the Middle East and the Northern Hemisphere, because they're around our calendar. That December 25th is the birthday of Mithra, the birthday of Saturn, as well as Jesus. When the sun reaches a low point and then starts to come back, there's time for celebration. In the spring, it's time to be in touch with the cycle of life, with the renewal of the earth, and the kind of natural, intuitive view that, you know, if the plants seem to die but come back to life, what about us? Aren't we at least as important as the plant? And so the natural kind of intuition is that the falling of the leaves are followed by the budding of the flower, and the sense that life is stronger than it appears. You can understand that on a literal level, if you like, or as a metaphorical level. So that was my first encounter with Easter. Let's talk about the natural cycles. My second encounter was going into the issue of spiritual resurrection. The sun seems to go out of our lives from time to time. That anybody who lives long enough is going to encounter loss, tragedy, loss of energy, even despair. And one of the messages of Easter is that we can come back, climb back, claw back, be helped back from the slough of despond. That there is almost always possibilities to get back up again, physically and spiritually. And that spiritual resurrection is a very strong metaphor and a strong truth. For many years, I based my Easter sermon around Peter. Peter was... Jesus didn't do a lot of stand-up, even though he was a Jewish kid and had a small group to work. But he didn't do a lot of stand-up. But one of the pieces of stand-up that he did was looking at Peter, and the name in Greek is Petrus, and it means rock, and making a pun. You are the rock upon which I will build my church. But Peter, Petrus, was not a rock. He was a human being with fears and flaws. And when he promised to be true, Jesus said, yeah, come on, you know, I know you better than that. You will deny me, depending on the gospel, two times or three times. And so at the time when Jesus is taken and somebody comes up to Peter and says, so, you know this guy? He goes, who? The guy with the beard and the toga that we just took away. I haven't seen him. I don't know him. Well, he doesn't feel so great about this after the crucifixion. He kind of feels like he has failed his God, failed his leader, failed his own best values, failed his pledges, failed his own sense of integrity. Someone else did something similar in the story, and that's Judas. Judas sells Jesus out, and when he realizes the depth of his betrayal of himself, he kills himself. That was the ultimate betrayal. Peter climbs out of the pit of despair. He rises again. As Joseph rose out of the pit into which he was thrown by his brothers, as Jesus on Easter is out of the grave, Peter climbs out of his despair and re-engages his life. He seeks spiritual forgiveness. It is granted, and he is born again. That is a born again story. And it is about our spiritual resurrection, our ability, even in the heart of darkness, to find a glimmer of light and life and to come back to ourselves. It is not a question, will we sometimes betray our own best selves? Will we sometimes not have the courage to act on our own beliefs and values? Will we not sometimes get lost, fall down, get bruised? Absolutely yes, we will all fall short of our values. But the message of Easter is you don't have to stay in despair forever. You can be forgiven, you can forgive yourself, and you can heal by healing others, by reaching out and having something more important to do to engage you and engage your life in a life of service, which is what Peter did. That was my second stage. My third is what happens sometimes if you've given one of the things that clergy sometimes fear and congregations should fear is that when we have to encounter the same holidays year after year after year, and you have this idea, I got to do something new and different. What can I do with Christmas? What can I do with Thanksgiving? What can I do with Easter? What can I do with all of the hardy, like the flowers, the hardy perennials? And sometimes we look to get cute and show off and miss points. But the advantage of doing these things, if there's a certain mindfulness, is that you become open to new insights. And I actually had an epiphany in the middle of last year's Easter sermon. Can't tell you how infrequently that happens, either to the clergy or to the congregant. But occasionally, if we're open to it, it happens. I'm talking about coming back to life, and I'm talking about the metaphors. And all of a sudden, I flashed to the week before when I had been conducting a funeral. And I said at that funeral, at graveside, what I have said for 44 years at every graveside service. This grave is not where your father, your mother, your sister, your brother, God forbid, your child lives. The grave is not their home. They're not there. And right at that point, it struck me, the tomb is empty. The good news of Easter, for people who will go beyond whether there is physical resurrection or not, which frankly not even all Christians agree on, I'll get to that in a second, but the good news of Easter is essentially true. Our loved ones don't live in the tombs, don't live in the ground, don't live in the grave. On Easter morning, if they were looking for who Jesus was, it was not in the Holy Sepulchre. It was in their lives, in the acts that he had performed, in their memories, in their speaking his name and taking his life seriously, preciously, and trying to carry it on. In fact, when you look at the story of Easter morning, when they show up at the sepulcher and he's not there, and then Mary sees him and Jesus says, "Don't touch me. I'm not fully ascended." It struck me that this is how we mourn. When we have lost people, there's that word again, when people have died whom we love, present tense, whom we love, do we not see them for a while? Do we not hear them if in the next room? Do we not drive by where they lived or where they died and have a flash of them? Do they not come to us in dreams? Not fully dead and not fully alive, but somewhere in between, because the process of grieving is the process of taking these people who loved us and whom we loved, and moving them into a more peaceful chamber in our hearts, and it takes a while. From Good Friday to Easter Sunday is not enough time for the followers of Jesus to have put him away in some comfortable place, for them not to have seen him in the market or on a hill, and then in their dreams and in their hearts. And when the last appearance happens at Shavuos, at Pentecost, 5 weeks later, that's the last physical appearance, and it's a mourning ritual. It says, okay, you can now not look for me with your eyes. You might still see flashes, but don't look for me with your eyes. Look for me for what I did and what I gave you. I think that's the heart of that story. And the heart of the gift, the two pieces of scripture that mean the most to me out of the gospel story is, you fed the hungry, you clothed the naked, you offered support to the widow and orphan, you visited the captive. And when the disciples said to Jesus, when did this happen? I actually just butchered the quote. Let me go back. Rewind the tape. I'll even get it right. I was hungry and you gave me something to eat. I was thirsty and you gave me something to drink. I was a stranger and you invited me in. I needed clothes and you clothed me. I was sick and you looked after me. I was in prison and you came and visited me. Then the righteous answered it, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you and thirsty and give you drink? When did we see you and invite you and clothe you? He replied, truly I tell you, what you did for the least amongst you, you did for me. And so when we are offering service, we don't burn incense to appease a sky god. We offer service as our prayer to bring the sacrament of giving into the sanctuary and not into the hall in the collecting of food and clothing and service. What we do for the least, the most needy amongst us, we do for the spiritual values of the divine, however we understand that, in all of those acts of taking care of human beings in active service. The other quote, which I think I will not need to read in order not to butcher, is really part of that. When Jesus asks a great rhetorical question, how can you love God, whom you have not seen, if you love not your brother, whom you have seen? So I tell you verily, love one another. It's so simple to say. It's so simple to understand. It is tragically so natural that we add a comma and a but with all the people that we couldn't possibly love because they're not really our brothers and sisters. But there was not an escape clause in that part of the gospel. Our duty is not to make judgments on the moral character of the hungry, but to feed the hungry. Not to make judgments on how deserving the poor and the naked are, but to clothe them. Not to get into, well, this person was sick because God's punishing them, or they just made bad food choices, but to heal the people who are sick. To let judgment go for a while and to reconnect ourselves to life and the source of our inspiration through service and honoring our relationship with our sisters and brothers. Religion, if it is a great abstraction of universal love, is easy to ignore. It becomes much more difficult when we are actually called in real time, in the real world, to love one another, to give aid and comfort and shoulders and arms and hugs to each other. To be able to give each other comfort, not simply at the joyous, easy times, but most people, when we're hurting and suffering, kind of withdraw a little with the don't touch me, don't hug me, I'm not available. That's when we need to hang in. To hang in with our friends, our family, when they're at their most hurt, their most prickly, their most defensive, and to take those chances of opening up our hearts to them. The message at the heart of religion, all religion as I understand it, as I have studied it, is to open up our hearts to each other, to see our common humanity, to see and enjoy our differences, but not in a judgmental way, but in a way that sees it as a blessing. For we are blessings in each other's lives. And our lives and our choices and our values, as we express them, as we fail, and as we recover, make a difference to each other, to ourselves, and to the world. Happy Easter.